I like tag teaming. The songs are going good with our theme of our lesson this day, as Jeff said already. One of the neat things about God's people, as you look at the history of the Bible, that's fascinating to me, is that at several points in history, God had one of His people in the highest form of the most powerful government on earth. We've already seen that as we followed Joseph. As he rose from slavery, kind of went backwards into prison, but then God raised him up to the second most powerful position in the land of Egypt at the height of its power. Can you think of some others? We introduced Moses. We're going to come back to him in just a second. Zooming on ahead in history, we come to Daniel, who was a captive when Babylon was growing and taking over people. Daniel rose up in Nebuchadnezzar's palace and court, and then even in the next administration was made one of three rulers, and he rose above the other two, so that Daniel, in the height of the Median Persian Empire, was really number two over that part of the kingdom. One more. There was a Jewish girl who was picked out for her beauty. Esther became queen of Ahasuerus in the most, in Persian Empire. And so at these different points in history, it's neat to see that God had one of His people right there beside the emperor or the king or the pharaoh in these very high points. And of course, there's usually a purpose for that. God had a plan for them. As Mordecai reminded Esther, this might be the very reason why you are where you are, because God has this plan for you to save His people. We saw that already with Joseph, that he was brought there and he finally in the end could look back and say, I see it now. I get it. This is the plan. This is why I'm here. This is why God made all this happen, so I could rescue my family from this famine and probably from the immorality of the Canaanites. We see that in Daniel's case as well, that there was a plan. And Moses would appear to be following in that same pattern, in that he was born to a slave family during sort of the worst times of their existence in Egypt, when the people had turned on him, the leadership had turned on him. They were trying to kill the boys. They were trying to kill everybody. And yet, through God's providence, working with these handful of women that we looked at last week, the handmaids, the Jochebed, Miriam, Pharaoh's own daughter, all these kind of conspired against him, so that Moses has now been rescued from the bulrushes and is being brought up in Pharaoh's house and is on course to be another one of these God's people at the various highest levels of government. We could see how that could easily turn into God helping His people out. And yet, that's not going to be the way it goes, is it? Moses' story takes a wild detour. And it doesn't follow this pattern that we looked at of Joseph and Daniel and Esther. Just when everything seems like it's on track, things go way off course, at least from a human perspective, in the story of Moses. And so that's where we're going to look at that part of his life in today's lesson and make some points from that, even as we've already kind of seen a preview of in that passage in Hebrews and in the song that we've sung and the song that we'll sing for our invitation song. In fact, so what we're going to do is we're going to be following along in Exodus chapter 2, if you want to find Exodus 2 in your Bible. We're going to be looking at two scriptures pretty much the whole time. Exodus 2 and Acts chapter 7. So I don't know if you have a marker or a piece of paper or just use your finger. We're going to flip back and forth. The third passage we're going to look at is Hebrews chapter 11. And so I was thinking that might be a little tricky to have three places that we have to flip back and forth. So what I'm going to do is just keep the Hebrews 11 passage on the screen and I'll refer to it as we come to it. But mainly, if you can kind of flip back and forth between Acts 7 and Exodus 2 in your own Bible, that'll be where we'll spend the bulk of our time. Why Acts chapter 7? Well, if you can remember your chapters from Sunday morning, that's Stephen. And Stephen's sermon is a big review of the history of God's people. And in fact, it is a history of how God's people had rejected their deliverers. And Moses is an example of that. And so Stephen tells the story of Moses and really adds some details and some insight that we don't even have in Exodus 2. So that's in Acts chapter 7. So we'll be kind of combining and getting the details we can from each of these accounts to put the story together so we can understand what it is that's happening. Now, in just to review from where we were last time, in Exodus chapter 2, you remember that it was time, Pharaoh's daughter had rescued Moses, and then she agreed to let this Hebrew woman that Miriam happened to find, just happened to be his mom, Jochebed, nurse him. But the day came when he had to be turned back over. Exodus 2 verse 10, when the child grew older, she, that is Jochebed, brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son, and she named him Moses because, she said, I drew him out of the water. And that's pretty much where we stopped last time. That's what this Hebrews passage introduces. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw the child was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edict. Now, at some point, they bring him back, as we see here in Exodus 2, verse 10. We don't know how long Jochebed had him. I looked up to see, you know, assuming they brought him back when he was weaned, because that was the arrangement. You'll nurse him for me, and then you bring him back. And they typically wean children anywhere from 18 months to 5 years old at this time. So she could have had him all the way through what we would consider preschool ages, you know, and he could have been as old as five, maybe even a little bit older, when finally she said, okay, I'm ready to give him back to you. And so Moses is presented to Pharaoh's daughter, and she is raised there. Now, if you're there in Exodus, the next verse, verse 11, says, one day when Moses had grown up, that skips 40 years into the future. And we know that from Acts chapter 7, actually. We wouldn't even know that from Exodus 2. But look in Acts chapter 7, flip over there. In verse 23, it says, when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brothers and the children of Israel. So what happened during the 40 years? This was one of those cases where wouldn't you love to know more of the story? Have you seen that cartoon version of the Prince of Egypt where Moses grows up and it shows him and one of Pharaoh's sons like racing around in chariots and, you know, they kind of let their imagination run wild. And who knows what all life was like for Moses growing up, the son of Pharaoh's daughter. It was probably very, very privileged. In fact, in Acts 7, we get some more insight into that. Back up in verse 20, at this time Moses was born and he was beautiful in God's sight and he was brought up for 3 months in his father's house. And when he was exposed, Pharaoh's daughter adopted him and brought him up as her own son. And Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in his words and deeds. A few details to note here. First, you know, we might think of she just sort of rescued him, and she was going to save him from dying, and so he was going to be brought up. He could have easily just been allowed to grow up among them as their servant or slave. But actually, it says she raised him as her own son. Now, perhaps Moses actually looked enough like the Egyptians that he could pass for her flesh and blood. I don't know that. You know, the Egyptian people today, at least, are not all that different looking from the Jewish people of that same area, in that they're not, you know, their tone and all that. But so it might be that Moses could pass for an Egyptian, and that she literally was raising him up. And maybe there weren't a lot of people that knew the story of him being rescued from the bulrushes. We're not sure. But it is interesting. It says there that she brought him up in verse 21 as her own son. And of course, we would think that would bring with it all kinds of privileges. He's part of now the royal family and everything that would go along with that. In fact, we're told in verse 22, he was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. A lot of these, I guess probably every successful world empire or kingdom has really valued knowledge and understanding. And one of the things that, if you've ever watched those documentaries on the pyramids and things like that, people still don't know how they did. I mean, there's theories, but we're not sure how they figured out a lot of things they figured out. And not only just how they made those big blocks and got them stacked up, that's impressive enough. And then, you know, there's like rooms inside of it. But also, they're precisely aligned the way that those pyramids are. And the corners and all that, I've seen numbers for just exactly how precise the angles are and everything, and it's unbelievable, given what we know about the technology that they had and the machinery, the very rudimentary kinds of pulleys and things they might have been able to use, what they figured out. So they were very smart people and probably knew a lot of things that have been lost to history. And surely Moses was probably educated in all that. He probably learned languages. He probably learned all about their gods and their myriad of gods, which we'll learn more about as we get into the plagues. He probably learned everything they knew about the sciences and about the stars and all those things, you know, in architecture. So Moses would have been a very, very educated person. One of his day, one of the most educated people, of the land. Now, interesting, compare that to the people he's going to lead out of Egypt, slaves. So as Moses would then later be leading them through the wilderness, you've got this sort of Oxford-educated person who was brought up in among royalty, who is leading out a bunch of people who were, you know, probably just as uneducated as you could be, just making bricks is what they knew. And yet that's kind of what he's going, that's how his role is going to end up if we look down the road a ways. But anyway, so he was brought up with all this education. I even thought about that. I thought it was kind of interesting to think. He must have learned to read and write those hieroglyphics too. I mean, that's what the Egyptians were, you know, the little birds, and their alphabet was shapes of things. And so I'm sure Moses learned how to read all that stuff. And it was only when they discovered the Rosetta Stone not too long ago that people even figured out what all that means. Because it's written all over all their paintings and all that. They finally deciphered how to read that. But Moses, I'm sure, had to go to school and learn how to form all those crazy little shapes and letters and how to write in their language. He was taught and brought up with all the education of an Egyptian. Also, in verse 22 of Acts 7, it says that he was mighty in his words and deeds. He obviously excelled. He was a natural leader. He was a gifted student, and he was very outspoken, and he was mighty in his deeds as well. Moses would have been very well known. Jack shared with me a book by Josephus where he writes a lot of the Jewish traditions, and you don't ever know how much to believe in all those things. But they had stories about Moses, even at an early age, leading people into battle and all that. I don't know if that's true. But clearly we see here in Acts 7, he set himself apart by his words and his deeds. He was a very talented person and already going to be a leader. And we can only imagine that his Egyptian family was very proud of him. That, you know, Pharaoh's daughter who had rescued him from the basket must have really been excited as he grew up to see that he is, you know, just an outstanding student and an outstanding person in all these ways. We might say, as is said of John and of Jesus, that he grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. And I'm sure that was true of Moses. It was true of Daniel too, remember? That he excelled among his fellows in learning. So God was blessing Moses as he blessed his other servants through this time. But what's interesting is, through all of that, he must have had some idea of who he was. We can only imagine that that can be traced back to that time when he was young and he was still living in his father's house until they brought him to Pharaoh's daughter. Because we're told in Acts 7 verse 23, when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brothers, the children of Israel. Now, if you just knew that and you only knew Exodus 2, which says the same thing, when Moses was grown, one day he went to see his brothers. It almost makes it sound like, well, did he just think, oh, I think I'll take a trip. You know, I'm going to see how everybody's doing. I'm just going to go out here and you know, you wouldn't know. Did he have any idea how they were being treated? Did he know? Maybe was he insulated in the palace and he had no idea about what was, you know, the fate of his fleshly kinfolk, how they were being mistreated? But I think, as Jeff pointed to, in Hebrews 11, that it actually reveals to us that he did know. Notice it says in verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Remember, that's what she wanted to make him. She treated him as her own son. He got to a point in his life when he said, I'm not your son. You're not my real mom. My real people are out there. Choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. This was a choice, a decision that he made. So, did he understand at some point, you know, maybe he just couldn't keep living that way? Understanding that his mom and dad and his brothers and sisters and cousins and all of his family, seeing how they're being treated, the life of luxury and ease that he was being brought up in, must have created some inner turmoil in him. Until he came to a point at 40 years old when he said, I can't do this anymore. I side with them. I don't belong here. I'm not part of this family. I'm part of that family. So that was, it was more than just, this reveals to us, it was more than just one day, he's like, oh, I don't know, I'm going to go see what's going on out there with the kin folks. And then things happen and he suddenly finds himself on the outs through no fault, you know, choice of his own. This says that it was a deliberate choice to say, I'm not part of this family, I'm part of that family. It was a decision that Moses made to choose to side with God's people. Now let's go back to find out what happened when he goes to visit them to Exodus chapter 2. Where we get a couple of details here, and then we'll come back to Acts 7. In Exodus 2, verse 11, one day when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. Of course, the Egyptians had been mistreating them since before Moses was born. Remember, that's how Exodus 1 reveals. This has been going on for a long time. But until this point, the Hebrews had no way of standing up for themselves. I mean, they were slaves. And they didn't have any way to say, you can't do that. And there was nobody in power who took their side until now. Here comes Moses to take their side, to help them. Verse 12, he looked this way and that, and seeing no one, he struck down the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Well, it's interesting. He says he looked this way and that. And that tells us that at the very least, Moses knew that this decision that he was about, this thing he was about to do, wouldn't go over well with the Egyptians. You know, we can say that at the very least. Whatever authority or power he had, it did not include the ability just to go out and kill an Egyptian for beating a Hebrew. That wasn't going to fly, as we'll see in a moment that it doesn't. And so we might wonder, even today, did he overreact? Was he justified in killing the Egyptian? Well, look at how Stephen describes it in Acts chapter 7. Acts chapter 7, verse 24, says, seeing one of them being wronged, he defended the oppressed man and avenged him by striking down the Egyptian. So in Stephen's terminology, he was defending the oppressed and avenging his brother, which sounds like justification. It sounds like in Stephen's telling of it that Moses was justified. And beyond that, Moses seemed to understand that his action was authorized by God. Look at verse 25 of chapter Acts 7. He supposed that his brothers would understand that God was giving them salvation by his hand, but they did not understand. So Moses understood in this action that he was acting on behalf of God to help his people. That's what Moses understood. That he had come out not just to say, how's it going? But he had made this decision to go out, and he was seeing their oppression, and he was taking action to help them. Moses understood that, but guess who didn't understand that? His own brothers. Did they know who he was? There's all these questions we wonder, you know. In fact, according to the Jewish tradition that Josephus has in his book, they knew all along about Moses growing up and they knew who he was. But I don't know. The record doesn't tell us if they knew who he was. But they didn't understand his intentions, and they certainly didn't accept him as their deliverer. They didn't embrace this action of his as being God's salvation for them as Moses intended for it to be. In fact, notice what happens next in Acts chapter 7, verse 26. On the following day, he appeared to them as they were quarreling, and he tried to reconcile them, saying, men, you're brothers. Why do you wrong each other? Apparently Moses could accept that the Egyptians beat the Hebrews. I mean, he wasn't going to accept it, but he understood that. They hated him, and they were beating him because they were the slaves. But what he can't understand is, you guys are kinfolk. Why are you fighting among each other? That's a good question, isn't it? I think it's a good thing for us to ponder. That you have, there's an enemy who wants to destroy us. There's an enemy who's the bad guy who hates us. But we're brethren, and so brethren aren't supposed to fight. You might remember that Paul said in Galatians 5:15, if you bite and devour one another, take heed lest you be consumed by one another. So the worst thing you can have is the people, like in, you see this on teams and stuff, you know, like in when a team will get mad at each other and then they start fighting. Boy, you're never going to win like that. No matter whether it's whatever team it is, basketball, football, baseball, if they get mad at each other and they're over there fighting among themselves and you don't stand a chance against the people who are trying to defeat you. And so Moses is saying, I can't believe this. You guys are brethren. Why are you fighting? But look at how they respond. Verse 27, the man who is wronging his brother thrust him aside, saying, who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday? It appears that Moses' intention was to leave the palace and to step into a leadership role where he would have two functions at the very least. Number one, he was going to help save them from their Egyptian oppressors. And number two, he was going to be a judge and a ruler over them, which of course he's going to end up doing all those things. But at this time, they rejected him. And that's the reason why Stephen's telling this story in Acts chapter 7, because he's saying you did the same thing to Jesus. Moses left behind the palace to come out and try to help them, and they rejected him. It's interesting that Moses knew that this killing of the Egyptian was known. And I mentioned this in an earlier lesson that he looked this way and that, and he thought nobody was watching, but somebody was watching. And I wondered, you know, was it like somebody who was standing around the corner that Moses didn't see? But it didn't occur to me then what's the obvious answer is. Who do we know saw what happened? The man who he helped, right? So there's a man being beaten, and Moses takes care of the guy beating him. He makes sure nobody's watching. But the one guy who saw the whole thing was probably the man that he rescued. And maybe Moses just assumed that he had enough sense not to run around telling everybody. And for good reason or bad, I don't know. The man might have just been telling people what Moses had done for him in a good way, and that word got out. But now word spread around, and it was only a matter of time till it went back to the palace. In fact, Exodus 2:15 says, when Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. So Moses knew this wasn't going to go well, and Moses ran. It goes ahead to say, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian, and he sat down beside a well. Here's the big detour. Here's the big place where like the record player arm goes off the record, because it's like, what is this? Imagine what Moses is thinking. Maybe he, like Joseph, had put it all together and realized, this is why I'm here. Like Esther, this is your moment. God's raised you up for just this purpose. So he goes out, he leaves behind, he says, I'm not your son. I'm going to go help my people. And yet, his own people reject him. Pharaoh wants to kill him. He has to run for his life. He's out in the middle of nowhere. He leaves metropolitan Egypt, and now he's sitting beside a well, out in the wilderness, in shepherd country, among some foreign people, and he's sitting there on this well. And what do you think was going through his mind? He gave up all that to help these people, and they wanted no part of him. Does that remind you of anybody? Remember what John tells us about Jesus in John chapter 1? The true light which gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own and his own people did not receive him. Exactly what's happening to Moses here prefigures what happened to Jesus so long later. That's Stephen's point in Acts chapter 7. That's why he's telling the story, because he gets to the end of it and he says, you guys have done this to every prophet God sent to you, and now you've done it to his son. But Stephen is just showing this pattern of behavior on their part. But he points out that they rejected Moses, who tried to be their deliverer way back when. And so it's hard to imagine how disappointing and how confused Moses must have been at this point. Where is he supposed to go? He can't go back to his adopted mom. He can't go back home where he grew up. His own flesh and blood people, he can't go back to them. They don't want him. So he's a man without a family. He's a man without a home. He's a man without a country. He's just out there in the wilderness, sitting by a well. It looks like this whole plan has completely collapsed and fallen apart and come to nothing. And now he's completely all alone. But what's interesting is what happens next. Go back with me to Exodus chapter 2. And let's look at what happens next, and then we'll be just about ready to wrap it up. Exodus 2, verse 16. Now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters. And they came and drew water and filled the troughs of water to water their father's flock. The shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and saved them and watered their flock. This is really cool, because here's Moses. He's this natural born leader. He's mighty in works and deeds. He's a powerful guy. He's very well educated. Prince of the Egyptians. And so, even though he's disappointed and he doesn't know what in the world his life is becoming, he's sitting there by the well. Here come these complete strangers, these women, and here come these shepherds, and they're being rude to the ladies and running them off. Moses doesn't just say, well, Hey, I'm done helping people. I am finished trying. Nobody wants me to interfere. These people can handle, this isn't my problem. These aren't my people. This isn't my place. You know, sorry guys, I'm burned out. No, he's still the same guy. He wants to help. He stands up for these ladies and it's shepherds plural. So this one man stands up to these shepherds and runs them off in a totally tough moment. I mean, it's pretty cool to see this side of Moses. And so he stands up to them. And he's that same deliverer. He's that same, person coming to the rescue. And so I think we see an excellent part of his character here. The young ladies apparently don't know what to do. They just go home and look at verse 18. They came home to their father, Reuel, and he said, well, how did you come home so soon? Apparently this happened all the time that they would go get water and it would take forever because they would have to wait till the men who were bullying them, you know, would be out of their way. And they said, well, an Egyptian, which is interesting because he must have still looked the part. You know, he had just left, I guess, the palace not long before. An Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and even drew water for us and watered the flock. And he said to his daughter, where is he? Why have you left the man? Call him that we may eat bread. He did all that for you. You just left him standing there by the well. Go back and get him. So they go back and they bring Moses to their house and their family. And look at verse 21. Moses was content to dwell with the man and he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah, and she gave birth to a son. And he called his name Gershon, for he said, I have been a sojourner in a foreign land. Well, this couldn't be the way Moses dreamed it was going to work out. But here he's finally found a people. He's found, you know, this family who's embraced him, who wanted his help. His own people didn't want his help. It again reminds me of what happened with Jesus. To those who did accept him, who welcomed him and received him, he gave the right to become sons of God. Well, there was finally a people who accepted Moses' deliverance and help. And he accepts them. And even though, you know, you have to wonder what in his own mind, what God's plan was. But for the next 40 years, he lives as a shepherd. The most well-heeled, well-educated shepherd there was. As this princely, son of Pharaoh's daughter is content to live out the rest of his days, it would seem, with Zipporah and a little family and some sheep or goats or whatever they were raising. And that's where he stays and till he basically grows old. And that would be the end of the story, except one day he sees a bush that's on fire, but we'll save that for another time. So let's stop right there and make some applications of this for our own, time today. First of all, you know, there's that song, the camp type song, Christian, Remember Who You Are. It's interesting that, Moses at such a young age, in fact, perhaps about the same age that kids start going to kindergarten, if you do that thing. And he is taken and he's been educated in all the ways of the Egyptians. And he's been raised by these Egyptians. So he didn't even get to go home at night to hear his mom and dad kind of, you know, continue to teach him about God. He's received a few years of instruction. And then he's plucked or taken from his own environment and he's raised, immersed in this pagan culture where they worship all these false gods and false ideas of gods, where the river itself is a god and all those things. And yet, through it all, he didn't forget who he was, that he was part of God's people. Same thing is true for Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, another one of those encouraging stories where people are taken to a foreign land, which I often liken in my own mind to sort of people that go off to college. And now they're completely surrounded in a pagan culture with unbelievers. And they're taught all these things and they're educated in all the ways of the Babylonians. And yet they remembered who they were. And that's encouraging to me. Not everybody will face those kinds of tests. Not everybody goes to a school where their teachers are unbelievers. Some are educated at home, and I can definitely see the wisdom of that in shielding them from that. Not everybody goes off to college to a big school where all your professors are atheists, or a bunch of them are. So you may or may not face those tests, young people. That may be something that you experience. It may not be, and you may be blessed to not have to go through that. But the good news is you can, even in a world where you are immersed with teachers and with leaders, whether it be at work or whether it be at school or wherever it is, you can be out there and yet remember who you are because of what you've been taught. And as parents, we can instill in them this identity that you are part of God's people, so that we can make that same choice to say, I don't belong to you guys. I belong to the Lord. I have a family. I have a spiritual family, and that's who I'm going to stand with. And that's going to come at a cost. we're told there in Hebrews 11, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God. It wasn't simply a matter of, do I want to be called a Hebrew or do I want to be called an Egyptian? It was a matter of leaving the safety of the palace and going out to be suffering with God's people. That choice for us, young people and old people, is one day when we have to say, who do I belong to? Who's my family? Who are my people? One of the big reasons to not choose the people of God is that that'll often come with it a certain cost in terms of suffering. It may be being made fun of. It may just be being ridiculed. It may be that you're sitting in a college classroom and everybody there agrees with what's being said, but you're the only one that doesn't, and they laugh at you, or the professor picks you out, singles you out. In my experience, they don't do that very often, by the way. But I'm saying it could happen that you could be ridiculed or made fun of for taking a stand for what's right. But that's part of the choice of saying, I belong to this people. And Moses came to a point in his life where he chose to suffer that. He also, part of that also included turning away from the fleeting pleasures of sin. It said he chose to be mistreated with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. It reveals that Moses understood something about the nature of sin. That it has no lasting fulfillment, no lasting satisfaction. It is some momentary thing. I don't know what, if anything, Moses experienced to come to that conclusion. If he found that out on his own, or if he was able just to observe that, or if he remembered some wisdom that his mother had taught him, or his father had taught him about the nature of sin and how it doesn't provide any lasting thing. But you can only imagine, as living in the palace, and there probably were very few things that would have been kept from him if he wanted it. He would have probably had access to anything this world had to offer in terms of pleasures and enjoyment. And yet he said, you know what, I'm leaving that behind. And we have to make that same decision. Paul wrote to a young man, Timothy, and said, flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Choose to side with these folks. And as doing that, turn away from those things. That's exactly what Moses did. That's exactly what we have to do today. Why did Moses make that decision? Notice how Hebrews wraps it up, the last verse of this section. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. I don't know what he understood about Christ. That's interesting. Of course, in the Old Testament context, it meant the anointed one. But he understood something about a reward that was coming later that was worth more than all the riches, all the treasures in the land of Egypt. He could see something that was more valuable than that. We have to see the same thing by faith. We have to recognize there's a reward out there that is worth far more than anything this life has to offer. And that's why we say, I'm going to also, like Moses, choose to follow God. I'm going to choose to follow Jesus. I'm going to choose to be part of his family and his people. If that means suffering, so be it. It will definitely mean turning away from the fleeting pleasures of sin. But in the end, the reward is worth it. Moses knew it. We have to know it too. This morning, if we can help you make your life right,